It's time once again for Dialogue Conspiracy with May Brussel. For the past 14 years, May has been researching and uncovering facts and evidence from between the lines of the news and placing them in a more thorough perspective of how conspiracy, political assassination, and abuses of power affect us all. Dialogue Conspiracy originates with KLRB-FM in Carmel, California. And now, May Brussel.
Good evening. This is May Brussel. It's Dialogue Conspiracy number 307, and it's February the 5th, 1978. I got a copy of an article from a listener and several telephone calls regarding the National Enquirer. They had an article January 31st, 1978, and some of you saw it and called me, and some of you wrote me letters about it. It involves several well-known psychics that were at the apartment of Jack Ruby, November 22, 1977, on the anniversary of John Kennedy's death. These famous psychics sat in the apartment of Ruby, and they gathered with several people that were involved in the assassination of John Kennedy. One was James Tague, a gentleman that was hit by a bullet on the curb that ricocheted into his cheek. And the other was Jim Lavelle, the officer, the law enforcement officer, who was handcuffed to Lee Harvey Oswald when Jack Ruby shot Oswald. These famous psychics were sent by National Enquirer to the apartment of Jack Ruby, the former apartment. One is William O'Hara, and the other is Mickey Don, D-A-H-N-E. And they were brought to that scene to see if they could get any new light under the mystery of the John Kennedy assassination. And while these psychics sat there, they came to the conclusion that the names of those involved in the conspiracy to kill President Kennedy would be revealed by 1980. And they went on to say that major incriminating documents would be produced by 1980, leading to charges against government officials, very high officials, for their part in the conspiracy to kill President Kennedy. And then continued, a reporter is involved who will be active to getting at the bottom of the plot, and added that maybe Carolyn Kennedy, as a reporter, might be involved in unearthing this story, or her brother, John Kennedy Jr. The psychics went on to say that the initials M and the initial B are involved in some way in the conspiracy, and that one of the men running for president in 1980 will have intimate knowledge about it. Well, of course, you know, you loyal listeners to Dialogue Conspiracy, that M means May and B means Brussels, and that we are going to have these facts out and documents will be out by 1980. I believe that it's possible to do that if everybody concerned gets their effort into exposing the facts behind this assassination, gets together on it, and spreads the information. We can have this out by 1980. I think that one of the most important documents I own in my file, among many of them, is the efforts of the CIA, or the suggestion that the CIA bring the daughters of Alexander Zeiger to Argentina. Alexander Zeiger worked with Lee Harvey Oswald in the Minsk radio factory, and that's where Marina Oswald met Lee Harvey Oswald, and it was set up to send her to the United States with the assistance of the CIA. There's documents on that, too. But I have a document of Isaac Don Levine asking the Warren Commission and the CIA to bring the daughters to Argentine by way of the CIA. So, and I think that's important because if they did, in fact, leave Minsk and get there, then the CIA took them there, then the CIA was helping Lee Harvey Oswald's boss in Minsk by sending his daughters to South America. Another document I have that's important, that is common knowledge, and it's actually the minutes of the Warren Commission meetings on the cremation of Lee Harvey Oswald. It isn't a private document. It's available and bound in one book that David Lifton published. And it, I think if they exhumed the body in Texas and found that, in fact, Lee Harvey Oswald is not buried in that grave in Texas outside of Fort Worth, then the story of the Warren Commission collusion would be pinpointed to Gerald Ford, a member of the Warren Commission who's still living, on why that body had to be cremated and why they lied about Lee Harvey Oswald. Actually, he did work for the CIA and FBI, and members of the commission knew it. And I believe that the psychics are talking about the man high up in government who knows about the plot. They said that one of them that will be running for president in 1980 will have intimate knowledge about the plot, and that, I believe, is Gerald Ford. I do know that Jimmy Carter was given information from Willem Altman, the Dutch journalist, that he hasn't used about the conspiracy, and I'm sure he's collecting information on who killed President John Kennedy. But I think Gerald Ford is that high government official that would be fingered and prosecuted. I also think that if the government agencies, the FBI and the law enforcement agencies, produced the original diary of Lee Harvey Oswald, you would find that they would have trouble producing it if they even went to look for it. The original, for all I know, has never been seen in 14 years. And the leaking of that diary, again, came from Gerald Ford, Life magazine. And if that diary were examined in terms of ink and handwriting, and Lee Harvey Oswald hadn't touched it, if it didn't have his fingerprints or any way to identify him to that original diary, then we would know that the FBI and the CIA planted false documents and gave them to the police officers in Dallas months after Lee Harvey Oswald was dead. And this original diary was never seen at his apartment, the rooming house where he lived before the assassination, or at Marina Oswald's residence with Ruth Paine. The original diary was produced after Gerald Ford leaked it and met with members of Life magazine in Washington and in New York. And after that, the story of the diary was in the Dallas Times Herald and Life magazine, but it had never been put in an inventory before. And those are the things that would bring out the real power behind the Kennedy assassination. The CIA documents about Alexander Zeiger, if their daughters were brought from Minsk to Argentina, exhume the body where Lee Harvey Oswald is supposed to be buried, and demand the diary. That's a good start, and I think these things could be done by 1980 if we put our effort into it. There were three good articles this month that came out. Two of them were in one single copy, and I want to mention them before they go off the stand. One is called Detective Magazine, Headquarters Detective, and it was sent to me by a listener of KLRB, and it has to do with an interview with Charles Watson. And I'll go into that at length on a future show, but I want you to get it. If you follow the Manson family and the massacre and think of it in terms of what I said it was, organized crime and the CIA and Sheriff Peter Pitches and the Los Angeles Police Department working in collusion with this group to bring on a bloody massacre and a series of terrors to hurry a police state and scare the people in the suburbs. If you are interested in that thesis that I've had ever since the time that Sharon Tate was murdered with the people in her home and the LaBiancas were murdered, you get this magazine, then we can refer to it, and you can see how much Charles Watson is saying. Right now, Charles Watson is at San Luis Obispo Prison in California. He's a chaplain there. He's very much into Christianity. I mentioned his name a few weeks ago on Dialogue Conspiracy. He gets in and out of every cell or section of the prison. He has special privileges because he's the Christian chaplain at San Luis Obispo. He's been meeting with important people from mafia and otherwise, and mafia equals CIA, and he knows he'll be out. Even though he cold-bloodedly murdered seven people, he is counting the days till he gets out, as against Charles Manson, who's really the fall guy who probably will never get out of prison. Charles Watson was that young, good-looking fellow from Texas that came to California and did the murders and stabbed one person so many times, I think he said 50 times, until his elbow, his hand was inside of the body. He repeatedly just kept stabbing and killed in cold blood. And the person who wrote the story, the interview with him, is an ex-convict who said he never thought he'd see the day where he didn't want anybody out of prison, but that you should read this again because it is obviously a chance to see how Charles Watson knows that he's going to get out of prison. And in spite of the fact that he isn't sorry about those seven murders and he's very analytical about them, and even proud of them, he will be on the streets again. And he has the support of higher-ups. He always did. He had separate trial from Charles Manson, and he was meeting with Beverly Hills lawyers before the murder, and I'm sure they assured him that if he went this Christian route and kept it clean, he'd be out. And they gave him the minimum publicity, and the article warned you about terror all around the country. The article is important for me because I've said that the California terror, the slasher, the strangler, the New York Son of Sam, David Berkowitz, the many senseless killings around the country, the San Francisco Zebra murders, and these various rapes, the Zodiac killers, the killing of Dr. Oda and his family up in Santa Cruz, and Edmund Kemper, the series of murders that he did, and Herbert Mullen, I believe that these men were under the control of persons who, like Charles Watson, was under the control. And it wasn't Manson. It was bigger than Manson. And they were involved in some way in these crimes, and that these crimes were done for the exact purposes that Charles Watson says they were done for, with his Nazi mentality to bring terror in the streets and to frighten people, bring on this police state. He's very clear about how the murders came down, why they came down. It's in Detective Magazine, March 1978. Then Gallery, I have March, maybe it's February 1978. I have typed, my note here is March, but look and see Detective Magazine, the article on Charles Watson. It's on the stands now. Gallery Magazine is on the stands, the February 1978, and it has two very important articles in it that were sent to me. One is called How the CIA is Using Your Mind for Control Experiments. Not in the past tense, how they used you for experiments. It's how they use you now, by Walter Bowart, B-O-W-A-R-T. I mentioned a few months ago that he had a book coming out called Operation Mind Control. It's being published by Dell. If you can get it, it may be on the stands now. I don't have it yet. And in this article in Gallery, he lists 146 kinds of drugs that the CIA is using for mind experiment. And he was the first person I knew who confirmed the information that I had of being able to control minds across whole cities with various radio towers and radio waves to take entire populations. I was given information on this, and he's the first person to confirm the facts on this kind of control of large masses of population. And in Gallery, February 1978, the same issue, there's the second part of a series, I think it's five or six series, by L. Fletcher Prouty, and the theme of this series is how the Pentagon controls the White House, and that when the White House makes decisions that are inconsistent with Pentagon policy, the Pentagon can go ahead and maneuver and get their wishes done, and the people in the White House just have to push aside. The first article that Fletcher Prouty wrote, which was excellent, was on the U-2 and how President Eisenhower wanted peace and entente with the Soviet Union. That was his goal and dream after World War I, and how the Pentagon flew the U-2 and downed it to end the peace talks and were successful. This article now has to do with the Bay of Pigs invasion and how John Kennedy was betrayed and set up for assassination by the anti-Castro Cubans, and how the Pentagon planned that invasion and then pulled it back and allowed Castro to live and made Kennedy the fall guy. Later, I believe he's going into how LBJ, President Lyndon Johnson, made peace efforts in Vietnam and put out feelers, and in 1968, again, he was sabotaged by Madame Chenault and various counterintelligence operatives high up in the American government and kept the war going in Vietnam. And then we know Richard Nixon made peace overtures to the Soviet Union. He went to visit there, and he went to China and wanted peace in his lifetime, and then that was sabotaged, and Richard Nixon was discredited and brought out of office. This is a good series, and Gallery is really to be commended for these kinds of articles. Two-in-One magazine is pretty good, and I suggest that you get them, because on this program we don't have time to go into all of those details. But if you get those articles or share the cost with somebody, magazines are pretty expensive, two or three people chip in and read them, you'll get a lot out of them. The president, Jimmy Carter, has asked Mr. Webster of St. Louis, Missouri, to be head of the FBI. In typical fashion, in the last few years, confirmation hearings just go through like a conveyor belt. In one or two days, the Senate says, yes, he's fine. There's no challenging, no hard questions. And I believe the Senate, within 2 days, was ready to pass on Mr. Webster. And a group of people have said, wait a minute, ask him some questions. And, of course, I keep mentioning his what they refer in the newspaper as the mysterious veiled prophet society. And you might write to your senator right now and have for the record that you know the society and that you want to know what it is, outside of his admitting that it involves 1,000 white males. We don't know much about the veiled prophet society, but at a time in American history where so many comparisons are being made to Nazi Germany and the kind of secret societies that Adolf Hitler had that helped bring him into power, it would behoove us to get some information about this kind of society and see what it is. There were many occult societies around Adolf Hitler. It centered around secret, esoteric, mystical doctrines. And his National Socialism was based on what they call the opium for the masses. It's interesting to know how many secret societies there were and how many there are. We've never been asking these questions in the United States, similar to this veiled prophet society. In Germany, there was that Thule Society, I believe I've mentioned on this program. There was the Leaders of the Order, the Vril Society, V-R-I-L, the Luminous Lodge, the German Order, the Bavarian Illuminati, the Knights Exemplar, the Teutonic Knights, the Golden Dawn. And all of these were mysterious and strange, but they had one single purpose, which surfaced once Adolf Hitler was in power. The Thule Society had the most mysterious founder, and there's a good article in the Conspiracy Digest on Nazis, mystics, and Islam, In Search for the Nazi-Muslim Connection, the Thule Society. It's written by Richard Gilman, the fall 1977 issue of Conspiracy Digest. Also, it's interesting that the new FBI director comes from St. Louis, Missouri, because the news just came out the last week or so that James Earl Ray said he had assistance and funding in St. Louis, Missouri, for his role behind the scenes of the Martin Luther King assassination. Now it comes out that Ray had a drug habit of $40 or $50 a week, that he had heavy finances going, that he was a Nazi, that he was making anti-black statements. None of this ever came out at the time Martin Luther King was killed. He was supposed to be, his assassin was supposed to be a loner. It wasn't a racist matter. It was just a simple deranged person lodged across from the Lorraine Motel who happened to have a gun when Martin Luther King was on the balcony. The story of James Earl Ray is a big story. Of course, it's in the news all of the time. But he did leave Missouri, and his first attorney, when he left, when he was arrested after he was brought back from England, worked as an attorney for the Bay of Pigs operations for the CIA and for the anti-Castro Cubans. And James Earl Ray had links, as I say, to the Nazis in America, had Nazi mentality, he had narcotics, he had connections to drug smuggling, CIA mafia connections, and the story of James Earl Ray will unfold more and more each week. The prisoner, the warden at the prison where he, in quotes, escaped, was a member of a legal team to help the Bay of Pigs operation. And all of this activity of James Earl Ray before he left that prison and then went traveling around until he ended in front of the or back of the Lorraine Motel where Martin Luther King was killed, began in Missouri, in the state of Missouri. And I wonder if the Veiled Prophet Society that our new FBI director belongs to has anything to do with the wardens or the attorneys of the people around James Earl Ray, who became the patsy in the Martin Luther King assassination. These are questions that the Senate wouldn't ask. But St. Louis, Missouri may come big later in terms of investigation. There are certain cities that are important to the assassination, more important than any other cities, and St. Louis seems to be turning to be one of them. Another one is New Orleans. And I think there was a turning point in the news today, or this week, rather, of Jack Anderson when he wrote about the John Kennedy assassination and the House Select Committee going to New Orleans to investigate the original charges that District Attorney Jim Garrison made in 1967 about a conspiracy down there in New Orleans. Now, you have to remember that Jack Anderson has been part of this cover-up team. He has covered the Kennedy assassination, or John Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, Martin Luther King, as a closed matter that there's been a lone assassin and anybody who did research was deranged or off their rocker. Now, privately, Jack Anderson knows better. I know somebody who was with him last week in Washington, and he was talking about Howard Hughes and the Howard Hughes that might not be buried in Houston, Texas, that could be Vance Cooper. Jack Anderson doesn't write about these things, but Jack Anderson knows better, and he moves very slowly, and he only lets out as much news as he thinks the people ought to know, and it has to be at the right time. So when the news is breaking anyway, he gets in on the tail of it and can say, I wrote about this. And now he's writing this week that the House Select Committee returned to the scene of its former investigation by District Attorney Jim Garrison in New Orleans. But this time he writes his article different. He doesn't put down Jim Garrison. He doesn't put down the House Select Committee. Jack Anderson tells it like a straight news story, which is really historic. in terms of the assassinations and the major news media, that Jack Anderson can just carry a story objectively, that the committee is down there without this ha-ha, or he'll find a bunch of nuts, or they're on a goose chase. In other words, I can't stress the importance of his just carrying it as a fact that the House Select Committee has gone down there. And they have interviewed Carlos Marcella, the mafia boss, under oath, and he's given testimony to the House Select Committee, and he has said that David Ferry, one of the people that Jim Garrison wanted as a witness or would have arrested working with Clay Shaw, was paid by him. Marcello acknowledged that he was paying David Ferry at the time of the Kennedy assassination. The cover story, he said, was that Ferry was working on his immigration case, but of course it was the Kennedys, Attorney General Robert Kennedy, that had him sent out of the country because of some illegal actions on the part of Marcello, and Marcello hated the Kennedy brothers. There's a paragraph in the Jack Anderson article that you might or might not have noticed, and it was this. He said, in talking about the investigation down there, in quotes, "The controversial Jim Garrison charged that David Ferry was Lee Harvey Oswald's getaway pilot. Ferry had ties to the right-wing militants and was an airplane pilot." Now, the interesting part about that sentence is that he doesn't say the aborted flight of Lee Harvey Oswald. He says that David Ferry was the Lee Harvey Oswald's getaway pilot. And getting back to what I said earlier at the beginning of the show, one of the important things in terms of getting this case open by 1980 is to exhume that body in Texas and see if Lee Harvey Oswald is buried there. Because when Jack Anderson at a national level begins to talk about a getaway pilot for Lee Harvey Oswald, and when you think of the information that reporter Joe Cooper had out, which I want to do at length sometime on the program with you, because Joe Cooper had made connections to the possible escape route of Lee Harvey Oswald, and as I said before, I believe it was to Baton Rouge and then to Brazil. We have a new can of worms opened up here, and I'm sure that Jack Anderson didn't intend to go to any more detail than just what he had there, but it was a lot for him to even say that the possibility of these people connecting in a conspiracy is being considered by the House Select Committee, and as I say, not to put it down. Last Sunday night on KLRB, I talked about the National Labor Caucus's research on the Buckley family and their relationship to the Rockefellers. And again, Jack Anderson had a call the very next day, which you might have found interesting in lieu of the show I did on KLRB. And he has a column putting down the National Labor Caucus. And he's apologizing for the Rockefellers and claiming, this is the way Jack Anderson says it, the patriots of the soapbox have seized upon an event, meaning Richard Nixon's demise, and they're peddling the politics of conspiracy. And they're grinding tormented propaganda against those who brought down Nixon. Now, that's Jack Anderson garbage when he doesn't want to carry it as a straight news story. He says, the National Labor Caucus is convinced that Nelson Rockefeller and David Rockefeller are leading an international conspiracy to subvert the United States. And he goes on to say that the FBI has a problem because they don't know what to do with these crazies, that they are pushing the FBI to investigate the Rockefellers as being behind treason, what he refers to as treason. And he calls his article one of hate. He suggests that these people are out on a hate rampage to even suggest that the Rockefellers would be behind any conspiracy that equals treason. Jack Anderson doesn't take into consideration the front page news of the same paper he's writing for, that the country is on the verge of bankruptcy, which I have mentioned before, and Chairman Skolnick has been worried about. He's studied the banking situation, and part of our economic problem is the high cost of oil we've been importing. And yet it's Mr. Brzezinski and Mr. Kissinger making deals overseas with the oil magnates for the Rockefeller Empire and the oil interests, the Seven Sisters, that has caused this terrible bankruptcy economically, because we're buying this oil at this inflated price. Jack Anderson doesn't bring out the fact that King Faisal in Saudi Arabia wanted to hold the oil prices down a few years ago, and the day after Henry Kissinger, Rockefeller's agent, left Saudi Arabia, Faisal was murdered, and then the price of oil went up, and the Shah of Iran and all the other oil companies made millions of dollars off of us by raising the price of oil. Anderson goes on and says that the FBI is looking into the National Labor Caucus and finds that they are trained in violence and that they have goon squads and military tactics and that they're indoctrinated in violence. But this is the same Jack Anderson that doesn't talk about Watergate defendants and their violence. He doesn't talk about Frank Sturgis, his close confidant, exposing at the time of Watergate just little bit facts about the Watergate Hotel, but not telling about their arsenal of weapons that they had in Miami, or the fact that their arms were loaded in their automobile at the airport, or that they had ordered weapons for riots in Miami. Jack Anderson doesn't talk about the Mitchell plans for kidnapping people on the left, or radicals, or anti-war protesters at the time of the Republican convention in Miami, or Mr. Caulfield working for Richard Nixon, threatening to kill James McCord, or the airplane crash of Dorothy Hunt, and a lot of other violences we could go into. What he's trying to do is to show that the Labor Caucus is violent because they are exposing the Rockefellers as conducting treason in the United States. I gave a address on the air of that Conspiracy Digest that has books on Rockefeller, and I have an address for bookstore and Aptos if you want to write to me where you can get books on the Rockefellers, and see if the Labor Caucus is far off from their explanation of the Rockefellers and what they're doing to the American people, and then read Jack Anderson with his hogwash and how he covers up and tries to blame the people who are exposing all of this. He calls his article Dances of Hate, as if the Rockefeller Combine and the multinationals, ITT, and these huge corporations are not as much conducting dances of hate. There's some books here that would supply information on the Rockefellers just to back up the Labor Caucus. There's one called Rockefeller Internationalist, Man Who Misuses the World by Dr. Emanuel Josephson. There's another book, The Federal Reserve Conspiracy and the Rockefeller, Their Gold Corner. This, again, is by Dr. Josephson. And he wrote a book, The Truth About Rockefeller's Public Enemy Number One, Criminal Psychopaths, The Rockefellers by Dr. Josephson. These three books are available. The Rockefeller File by Gary Allen, Rockefeller's Financial and Political Empire, the Labor Party put that out, Rockefeller Power, America's Chosen Family by Meyer Kutz, A Portrait in Oil by John Winkler, Rockefeller's Follies by William Rogers, David, A Report on a Rockefeller by William Hoffman, John D. Rockefeller Jr. by Raymond Fosdick, The Story of the Rockefeller Foundation by Raymond Fosdick, another book he did. There's some authors that just write about the interests of the Rockefellers. There's other people that have written articles. The Labor Caucus isn't the only group exposing them, and the sole purpose of Dialogue Conspiracy isn't to single into one facet of this multi-level group of conspiracies. But I just want to show the contrast in the way Jack Anderson comes down on a group that's trying to search for answers. And this is what I mentioned last week on Dialogue Conspiracy, that Joe McCarthy was looking for communists, and I don't praise him or what he did, and the Red Scare that he conducted. But when he went into the conspiracy in the United States and came across the far-right Rockefeller Nazi connections while he was looking for communists, that is the time that Joe McCarthy had to be discredited, moved out of office, moved out of Congress, and then he died shortly after. After that point, he was a healthy, happy man. He adopted a small daughter and was trying to look for enemies from the right, from the left, and found them on the right, and then they had to come down against Joe McCarthy. I think that the Anderson article on the Kennedy thing is optimistic. The cover-up on the Rockefellers isn't. But read your papers and see how he interprets the news, because I think it's important. He's a sounding board, and I watch him carefully, and I think you should get used to watching Jack Anderson. Well, our time is up. This is Dialogue Conspiracy, and it's Mae Brussel in Carmel, California. I'll see you next week, next Sunday night.
You've been listening to Dialogue Conspiracy with Mae Brussel.